Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You join us for episode 199 of the Need to Know podcast. There is one episode to go before the big anniversary of 200 episodes, and I'm joined once again by my sidekick here in 2019 for the first time. Welcome back, Britton.
Good to be back, Robert.
So how did you amuse yourself over the Christmas break?
Oh, look, I tried to keep out of trouble, went and spent some time with the family, turned the PC off, didn't come into work for a few weeks, really just switching off, relaxing, try and take some time out, and really think about what am I going to achieve in 2019? What goals do I want to kick? How do I want to approach it? And I'm still sort of in that process at the moment, but now I'm getting an influx of work coming through. Office 365 to Office 365 migrations, that old chestnut, a few of those sort of interesting sort of jobs. So that will be interesting. How about yourself?
Always a bit of a quiet time when it comes to external requests, but always lots to do internal. I've been focusing on getting through some Microsoft certifications. So I did some Azure exams, the 300 Azure exams there, and also completing the new MS, which are the Microsoft 365, MS 100 and 101. I've also noted that Microsoft is bringing out an MS 200 and 300, 400, and I think there's also a 500 coming out. So again, they've broken up the Office 365 exam into administration, collaboration, messaging, and so on. So we're going to see a lot of these sort of certification exams that are much more focused on a particular topic, and then when combined together, that will give you the overall skill set or the overall qualification in the total product, because it has become so large. And obviously the focus now is on Microsoft 365 rather than Office 365. And if you do have any of those older qualifications in Azure and Office 365, they will be retired shortly as well. So a good reason to jump on the certification bandwagon, I think, and focus on at least getting some certifications, because I think that it's going to become more and more important as we go forward, because now with Azure and Office 365 being a very common system, we're unfortunately seeing them badly implemented and customers can't really determine who knows what they're talking about. So certifications probably are a step in the right direction if you are going to do that for your career. So certainly recommend doing that, and that will keep me busy, I think, for a couple more weeks at least.
And I think it has got that broad now. The amount of things that the product can do compared to when it first came out. I've been doing Office 365 for, I suppose, nearly 4 years now. It was really a toss-up between 365 and G Suite back in those days. And it's like now, compared to now, just doing one thing around identity requires, you just about need a certification just to have your head around the whole suite, I think. Let alone, you know, being able to deploy it and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm really big on the certifications, although I don't have any of the official Microsoft ones. I probably should make an effort and go do them, because some of them are free, aren't they, Robert?
Yeah, they've got some introductory ones and they've got some ones that are cheaper, but even so, they're not a huge investment, really. I mean, there is a cost to them, and I mean, that is, but there are benefits. There are double shots you can take to make sure that you get as much chance as you can. I would also say that certifications give you a much broader outlook on the product. So most people in the SMB space tend to look at the low level, the cheaper, the SKUs with less features. By doing a certification, I think it opens your eyes to all the possibilities throughout the range, and that may solve problems for customers. So again, I think appreciating the full breadth of what some of these solutions do is another worthwhile benefit of doing certifications. And I think the thing is that if you look at yourself as a professional and you want to continue to improve professionally, then you do need to invest some time in yourself And the good thing about certification, it gives you a known set of topics to cover, and there is a tangible outcome as well. So I think that there are too many IT people out there who say they know stuff and they really don't when push comes to shove or when it gets outside their comfort zone. And I think, you know, certification, again, is a good way to get in the discipline of continued learning.
Yeah. So you're actually doing some training around the MS-100 certification?
Yeah. So I think that the entry level for people is going to be this MS-100 certification. So that's really an administration style Microsoft 365. That basically, we'll put the link in the show notes to show you what it's all about. But that exam currently is in beta. So that means they're still testing out questions. They're getting a feel for it. When it comes out of beta, probably in the next couple of weeks, then it will be the standard exam. So again, to help people get a bit of a jump on that, get an early start on, I'm offering a 7-week remote training course. So basically that will be a 1-hour lecture, 1-hour lab, and also basically some requirements from me to complete every week. So that's probably an extra hour of your time. So about 3 hours a week dedicated time over 7 weeks. And I think that's going to put you in a pretty good stead for getting through that exam. And then hopefully after we've done that, we'll look at another 7-week period to look at the 101 and then progress through all the others as well. So I think that many people do have a problem, or they do struggle when they try and study by themselves. So hopefully they can leverage off a program that I'm developing to obviously give them a direction, give them the right information, and also a bit of a kick up the ass to make sure that they actually do what's required in the study to get through to be able to pass the exam. And then they should be able to walk in with great confidence and have a really good chance of making sure they get through that exam. So that's what I can offer. Again, I'll put that on my blog. I'll, again, make that available through the social media networks. But again, if you want to contact me about that, director@ciaops.com. And this will be one of an ongoing process. So again, if you're listening to this 12 months after the fact that we released this, I'm sure that I'll be running another program on another certification. So again, hit me up and I can include you in the next one that's coming around.
Yeah, that sounds really good, Robert. And I suppose, do you want to say pricing about what people should be looking at?
No, I think the best thing to do is just get people to contact me. Obviously, there are discounts if you're a patron. So if you join the CIA Ops Patron Program, which you'll find at www.ciaopspatron.com, then there are discounts available through there. There is a, you don't have to be a patron, but obviously be paying a bit of a premium there. If you join up, become a patron, then I'll pass on the discounts. And the idea is for me is to make sure that we get people who are keen to become patrons, and then we also work with them to make sure that they're as qualified and skilled as possible. And part of that is this certification. And a good way to encourage people is to give them discounts to get in the program and become certified. So that will, again, improve their business and also improve them professionally.
Speaking of getting educated, Ignite 2019 is coming to a city near you. Sydney. Yep, it is actually confirmed in Sydney.
That's right. It is in Sydney February 13 and 14, which is a Wednesday and a Thursday from memory. I'll certainly be there. I think a lot of people will be there. It's worthwhile not only to pick up the technical content, but also do some networking. They've recently released the agenda, so we'll put the link in the show notes. You can go in and you can look at the topics that will be talked about. All the sessions are then available. So again, you can start planning that out. Again, there's going to be, obviously there's only one in Australia, being in Sydney. So if you are coming, let us know. We'll certainly be putting some social events on around that as well, a dinner and whatnot. So again, if you want to catch up, by all means, let us know. I'm sure Brenton, you're going as well.
Yeah, look, I'm looking at the agenda, deploying modern desktop. That's really interesting to me. Optimizing teamwork in your organization. So I'm going to assume that's really built around teams, and then securing your organization. So those three for me are stuff that I do every day, talking to customers about. So being on the cutting edge for that, it's well worth a quick trip up to Sydney. And I don't think they'll have the flights from Bendigo to Sydney set up by then. So that'll be a bit of a shame, but it's not too far down to Tullamarine, so I'll jump on a plane and come up for a couple of days.
I think the other thing, too, that to remember in all of this, the technical content's great, but the real benefit I see is the networking. So you're going to be able to network with people from Microsoft Australia, Microsoft Worldwide, other partners, Disties, all sorts of things. So again, a lot of the benefit really is in this networking, meeting people face-to-face, asking questions, as well as those technical sessions. So again, look at it as a whole encompassing environment that you really need to sort of deep dive into and really get the most out of it. You need to make sure that, again, you do take advantage of the opportunity to network, because there will be thousands of people there from all different locations and all different businesses. And that's really the best place to start building those relationships and finding out what people do, how they do it, what they're struggling with, what you could help them with potentially as well. So much opportunity there. And again, we encourage people who will be going to the event, please let us know. Happy to hook up and organise something with you.
I think that'll be really good. There is a patron dinner on one of the nights there as well. So if you're a patron, you'll be able to come along to the dinner, have something to do after all the learning of the day, and debrief and have a bit of a chat and do some networking with the other patrons.
Yep, exactly. So we'll make that up. We'll open that up to other people as well, probably, but patrons will get the benefit initially or get the initial invite. But by all means, if you're interested catching up, whether you're a patron or not, please feel free to contact me via the different means, and we'll make sure that we do make some time to catch up at the event or after the event. Now, we've also had some updates, as we always do, from Microsoft. Probably the best ones are the December updates put out by our friend Jim. So do you want to cover some of those off for us, Brenton?
Oh, yeah. So I don't want to go too much into it. He's talking about 3D models in PowerPoint. So rather than having the static 2D slides, you can now have the 3D slides. So that was kind of cool. He's showing that off. What else do you have on there, Robert?
Oh, I'd have to go back and have a look. It's stretching my stretching. I think he had a couple of
the acronym suggestions. That was pretty cool. So all the acronyms that we use, so he mentioned a few from Microsoft that were very common sort of acronyms there. It will now do a bit of AI over that and link it back to what the acronym actually means. So you can use your acronyms in your document, and then people who don't know what BFI is or whatever, they can just, it will show them in the sidebar this word acronym suggestion. So, you know, reusing PowerPoint slides, Mac OS gets a dark mode. So
some,
great for Mac.
Passwordless login as well. More security.
Yeah, that's stuff, really cool. Yeah.
So there's plenty of stuff, and it's a good way to, again, get a nice quick update as a video rather than having to read stuff. There is links to show notes as well. So we'll make sure that we do link the YouTube video in there, and that'll have links to all the other stuff in there. I think probably the other thing that continuing on as a theme, and we will have as an interview focus for this episode, is this cybersecurity. So again, the government, the Australian government's come out with some publications around the risks for MSPs, and the questions that customers should be asking MSPs. It's obviously clear that MSPs are a bit of an Aladdin's cave of treasure when it comes to bad actors who are looking to break into customers. So again, some guidance there that people should be aware of if you haven't seen it. Again, we'll put the link in the show notes. And again, we're going to see, I think, more and more legislation, more and more government focus on making sure that customers or businesses are aware of their requirements and the risks involved when it comes to cybersecurity. Unfortunately, too many people have been too casual for so long. So hopefully that's something that's changing, and progressive IT pros can go in and talk to businesses about that and make it a differentiating point. But it really is something I think that has to change, to otherwise we're really going to be suffering from this, I think. I mean, what's your take on it, Brenton?
Yeah, look, there's been a string of attacks against companies who have good cybersecurity, but they have a MSP who, does something for them, or maybe it's a domain registrar that looks after their domain or something. So the Chinese hackers are giving up on attacking bigger companies that have their act together, And they're looking at the smaller companies who don't have the resources but have all the privileged credential access. So similar to the phishing attacks where they target people in HR because they've got access to all the personal information of everybody, this is a very targeted attack through MSPs to find out how can we get into their admin access because they have got access to a lot of systems that maybe they shouldn't have access or maybe they need it to do their job and they're not using technologies like 2FA and they're not restricting admin privileges properly and they're not following the ASD Essential 8. So the government's really pushing on to end customers now and saying you have to go out and question your MSP and make sure they're following these things because even if you're doing everything right, they basically have full access to your entire business and can shut it down in a heartbeat. And if you don't realize that, then you need to know that and you need to do stuff about it. So they've put out some really good resources. It still seems really early. They're opening up a partner program for MSPs now because they've sort of ignored us for a long time, I think. But now they've really realized that, yeah, okay, we really need to engage, similar to how NBN code was they didn't want to engage with MSPs and now they've got a whole channel program and they're really trying to help us work with our customers to get to the right outcome.
So on that, we'll put a link in the show notes to this little article called Contextualizing Attacker Activity with Sessions in Exchange Online. Basically, there's a bit of a deep dive into how the bad actors can get access to Exchange Online if it's left in the default configuration. So if you have something called basic authentication still enabled, it can allow a bad attacker to basically keep banging away with passwords and do spray attacks against your environment. If you've got users with bad passwords, then that could compromise that account and so on. So there's a list of suggestions there. There's a list of examples as to how these attacks are perpetrated and what you can do to improve that security. Probably the best one is to remove basic authentication. But again, as with all security, there will be a trade-off. So basic authentication is used typically with Outlook 2010 and before. So you could have ramifications with that. So again, should be done with care, but should be a direction you're moving towards to make things more secure in the environment. One of those is basic auth, but we'll put this link in the show notes so you can have a read through and understand how to make your tenant more secure. And the other one we've got is that Microsoft has introduced basically two new SKUs in the security and compliance offering. So basically what these do is these take some of the advanced features that are in the Microsoft 365 E5 offering and breaks them out into individual add-ons that you can then add to Microsoft 365 E3. So if you look at Microsoft 365 E5, it's got a lot of stuff in there. Maybe you don't need the enterprise voice and some of the other features. You can just purchase these add-ons for $10 and $12, and they can then be added to an existing Microsoft 365 E3 to give you some of these security and potentially compliance features. So again, we'll put a link in the show notes to the announcement about those additional items that you can consider if you have Microsoft 365 E3 already.
And it does look like you need to have E3 in order to take advantage of this. It says pricing for E3 customers before volume discounts. So I would be saying that they wouldn't be offering it on a business premium SKU.
No, I suppose people weren't quite sure. So I checked with two Microsoft contacts and basically they've told me that yes, these two SKUs only can be applied to Microsoft 365 E3. It'd be nice if they could be applied to others, but at this stage, they can only be applied to Microsoft 365 E3. Maybe down the track, we'll see it offered to other SKUs, but again, just beware that you will need that SKU before you can add these two additional options that Microsoft talked about. Now, it's not all gloom and doom, or it's not all security and, making things tougher. We have got a new offering from, an expansion of the offering from something that was in E5 that Microsoft is now going to make available to all SKUs. So the My Analytics ability, which is basically surfacing the Office graph. So it's going to, My Analytics, if you haven't seen it, let you know how many emails you send, which person you send the most emails to, how long they take to open it, and so on. All this sort of productivity, and they call it a fitness tracker for work, will now be available to all SKUs shortly in Office 365. So you should see that flowing through in the next month or so. Again, we'll put a link in the show notes to show you the information about that. My analytics, again, coming to all SKUs. And the other one that I was impressed with was that Microsoft Stream, which is their corporate YouTube, available in Office 365, now has an app on the iOS platform. So now you can view those videos you've uploaded into Microsoft Stream. You can view those basically on the go using your iOS, and we would assume that an Android app isn't too far behind. What do you think about those two things, Brent?
Oh, look, let's start with Stream. I think Stream, when you look at how the world works, you look at enterprise social, you look at social networking that's taken over the world, that's where people's eyeballs are, and then you look at Teams, and you go, okay, well, Teams is going to function very similar to Facebook, and that's where the eyeballs are going to go. Second biggest search engine in the world is YouTube. So I think video, particularly in bigger organizations with more resources, is just going to be the next big thing. So making sure that, you know, you can have all of that in your core productivity platform, you can manage the permissions, you can have it all linked in with everything else. This will be a game changer. In the past, Office 365 video was okay. It was only in the enterprise SKUs. But now with Stream and all the additional functionality that they're building into Stream, the integration with everything, I think this is something we need to all keep an eye on, particularly for mid-market type customers or companies. So yeah, I think that's really exciting that they're bringing that out on iOS and Android. And the other thing with My Analytics, this has been a big thing in the E5 SKU. This has been one of the big differentiators of the E5 SKU for quite a while, hasn't it, Robert? It's been around for, what, three plus years?
Yeah, so basically it was unique to E5.
Yeah, so that's been really cool. It's all about, like, how productive are you? So if you went and asked someone, you know, how much time do you spend in a meeting per month? And they probably go, I don't know. How many emails are you sending? How much time are you spending in email? I don't know. So you can't manage what you don't measure. The My Analytics really helps people keep track of all that stuff. And because it's across the whole office suite, it has a really unique insight into how you're spending your day, how much time you're spending after hours, how much time you're spending in meetings, all of that sort of stuff. Sends you a nice weekly report. So I think it's something that we should all be turning on as soon as it becomes available in the SKU that you're using, probably E3, and just have a look at it and just see, oh, can I go out and help a customer implement this? And then we use this as part of our adoption into Teams and Microsoft 365 as a bit of a measure of success. So people can actually say, okay, well, I'm spending less time in email. Well, that's pretty good. I'm getting more stuff done. But it's hard to see unless they see the numbers in front of them. So I wonder if that's the masterstroke behind this move to push it into all SKUs. And then it does give enterprise, like organization-wise analytics as well, doesn't it, Robert?
There is another add-on. There is another SKU above that that does give you like a centralized that you can look at anonymously, look at all your employees together. That is a is generally an add-on, and again, E5. So we would expect that that would become available too for businesses that want to do it. There'd probably be a cost for that, whereas the analytics, My Analytics, has been given in for free. And basically all that doing is just reading the Microsoft graph, which is sitting underneath there, looking at the interactions with the information and the people. So it makes sense, and it also talks to the fact that a lot of the services and features we see in the higher SKUs will eventually sort of trickle down to the more basic SKUs over time as more features are added up the top. So again, another good indication of why an investment in a ongoing subscription provides value. Nothing you'll have to do. Basically, when it becomes available, it will turn up in your tenant and it will start being enabled as well. And again, that will make a big difference to people when they look at their productivity. If you use things like rescue time and that, it will be a really great resource as people do use that Office 365 environment. And again, if you look at it potentially with a Windows 10 machine that's Azure AD joined and all connected together, you could potentially end up with a huge amount of really valuable statistics on how you use your machine and how productive you are with different applications during the day. So again, watch out for it. We'll put a link in the show notes so that you can have a look at that. The last one I've got here basically is a bit of a summary on all the advances that have been announced, I suppose, in 2018 around SharePoint. So they call it the SharePoint Roadmap Pit Stop. So a nice summary of all the new features that have been released or are coming to SharePoint in the very near future. There's a huge amount of these coming. Again, one of the really big improvement in services, I think, has been what SharePoint has added, especially in the look and the feel, the branding, the visual impact that SharePoint has provided and maybe has been missing for a long time, certainly is now there. My standard encouragement to people is that you really don't need to go and do custom branding. Use what's out of the box. Therefore, it's very unlikely that anything will break when upgrades do happen. So lots and lots of holiday reading for people there, I think, to keep up to date. But we do want to make sure we get into our interview on Windows Defender. Is there anything else from you, Brenton, before we throw over to that interview?
There's probably only one last thing here, that the government's running around giving away or discounting cybersecurity assessments from a company. So I was having a chat to Court, who's been on the podcast before, and they said this particular organization's really around web security. So it's sort of a bit interested in how their assessment will go, or whether they're going to bring in people to come and pinch your work or whatever. But it's something to be aware of because your customer might bring it to you. So we've just added that in the show notes. You can have a look. It's for very small businesses, sort of under 20 seats, who don't know where to start with it all. And I think you pay, you know, grand, and they give you a grand, and then someone comes and does an assessment of some sort. So definitely be aware of it. Whether you might want to push it to your customers, maybe not. Maybe you want to push it in your competitors' customers. Up to you. But yeah, we better get on to the interview, Robert.
Before we do that, a couple of housekeeping points to go through. Firstly, again, I'll call your attention to, hopefully you realize that this is episode 199. Our 200th episode is going to be a live record on the Monday, the 21st of January at 4 p.m. Sydney time. If you want to participate in that and actually come on and be live with us, you can go to the link bit.ly/n2k200. We'll put that in the show notes. Again, anybody's welcome. Just come on. We'll send you an invite. All the details, you can join the crowd of people at the moment. Not a huge crowd, but there are a crowd of people who want to come on and help us celebrate the 200th episode of the Need to Know podcast. And again, it should be a fun episode, probably a bit hard to control. But if you want to be part of that, by all means, please go to bit.ly/n2k200. Sign up and we'll make sure that you get the details before the event in about 2 weeks from today. And if you want to give us any feedback or you want to follow what's happening, you can do it via N2K Podcast on the Twitter and also on Facebook. If you want to use traditional email, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. So that's needtoknow.cloud. And I think that Brenton's probably at Contact Brenton on the Twitter, and I'm at Director CIA on the Twitter. We certainly encourage you to give us any feedback, suggestions, what you'd like us to talk about in more detail. Again, we need to start teeing up people to do interviews and get that information. So we look forward to hearing from people. Also, don't forget to review this episode and these podcasts also on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever. That certainly makes them a bit more available to other people to discover and listen in, because I think we're giving some good information around the Microsoft Cloud, hopefully with a bit of fun and games as well. So again, encourage you to do all that, but remember, join us for our 200th episode on bit.ly/n2k200. And I think I have done everything I need to. What about yourself, Brent? Anything that I've missed?
No, you've done everything, Robert. Well done.
Luckily, I think we can go on to episode 200. But before we do that, we will throw over to our interview. Welcome to my interview this afternoon with Ian Wiltshire. Ian, welcome. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. So Ian is from Microsoft. He's the Program Manager, Windows Defender ATP, so Advanced Threat Protection. Thought we'd get him on to have a talk about a product that seems to be getting a lot of press at the moment, a lot of favorable press, that is, around the security space, but probably a better idea is to actually get Ian maybe to give us a bit of a background on Windows Defender, what it is, and again, how something like ATP fits into the family.
Yeah, for sure. So hopefully, you know, you've maybe started to hear a little bit more about Windows Defender or starting to do it a little bit better. Essentially, at its most highest level, it's Microsoft's answer to threat protection. So we previously had sort of a whole bunch of different products with various different names, and all that we've really done in terms of this idea of having a family is just give them all, bring them all under a unified name, and that's what Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection is. Within that, what we've got is we have traditional HIPS and attack surface reduction technologies. We can definitely go into some more details on this sort of stuff, but that's essentially looking at how we can lock down individual clients from bad actors such as malware and malware that uses exploits or vulnerabilities to do bad stuff on the actual device, as well as what we're calling next generation protection, which is your bread and butter antivirus technologies. And then on top of that, we also have what we're calling endpoint detection and response. And that's what traditionally was we were referring to as Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. And that's really for large scale enterprises that want to be able to hunt down specific attacks and explore exactly what exactly is going on within their environment in terms of security. So my focus is on attack surface reduction and next generation protection, which, as I sort of mentioned, is all about locking down the actual endpoint, the device, and essentially preventing bad things from happening on that device, whether we're protecting it before it even has a chance to do anything with antivirus by knowing about certain malware that we want to block, or whether it's we're actually analyzing behaviors that are happening right there on the computer or on the device, and then saying this matches a whole bunch of indicators that we have that tell us that this is potentially something that's really bad, and so we'll block it and prevent it from being able to do anything nasty on the device.
Okay, so most people are probably very familiar with the Windows Defender that comes with Windows 10 and obviously protects their devices. Now, that's typically a standalone implementation of that Windows Defender, but again, how would we go about incorporating that into an enterprise or into a corporate environment? How can we link all those independent clients together to a central console and get policies, get management, and basically look after a complete environment of Windows Defender and security that you've spoken about rather than just doing as individual machines?
Yeah, so all of the sort of management and config that we have at the moment, we're really going big on incorporating that into Intune, which is obviously our cloud-based mobile device management portal. There's lots, all of the configuration, everything to be able to enable Windows Defender Antivirus, and that's the main client or the main sort of app or program that you'll see on Windows 10, as well as giving you a lot more finer control over some of these advanced technologies that help protect attacks that are happening on that actual device. In addition to that, when you have what we call an E5 license, which is the large-scale enterprise license, you also get access to a dedicated console, which is called the Windows Defender Security Center, which is, I'm not going to get into the whole naming issue going on there, but essentially that's a web-based portal that allows enterprise admins to really do that deep investigation, that deep hunting that they love to do to sort of get a much better understanding of what's going on there in their network. In terms of the actual configuration, you know, as I sort of mentioned, Intune is where we have all that sort of stuff. So they're backed up by an MDM CSP policies. So you are free to use, of course, other MDM solutions. You don't have to use Intune. Of course, we feel that Intune gives you a really nice holistic sort of overview of how to do all of this stuff. But one thing is we are aware that this is an ongoing issue, is trying to bring all of these bits and pieces together to make it really, really easy to make a dedicated security console that looks at everything from client-based protection or endpoint-based protection right through to network protection, as well as advanced hunting, give you lots of reports, like security dedicated reports that enable admins to really understand exactly how they can go about configuring their environment, as well as understanding what the configuration has done to their environment, and then also give them suggestions, like proactive suggestions on what they could do to have a safer environment. And what that is that's called the Microsoft 365 Security and Compliance Center. We just announced it at Ignite back in September. We're definitely releasing that sometime early next year. It's currently in some internal testing and some private testing, but that essentially is going to be our all-up security solution that will really get to the heart of this problem that we know a lot of people are having around trying to incorporate all of these different tools and technologies and understand how they work together.
Okay, so is it fair to say that configuration and management of the endpoints typically is done with Intune, and the monitoring and investigation is done in that web portal that you spoke about? Is that a fair summary?
At this point in time, it is. I think that's a really good sort of way of looking at it. There is some basic reporting that can occur with Intune, and even potentially Config Manager, System Center, Configuration Manager, if you have that. But, you know, I'll be totally honest, they're not as robust as we know admins want, especially from a security standpoint. And that's where we're looking at really like beefing that up. And that will be part of the first release of this new console that will be coming out, the Security and Compliance Center, which will really sort of have that huge focus on security.
So that console that you're speaking about that is going to be coming, is that going to be available to all plans, or is that going to be, like I said, just E5? What's the sort of target plan for to get that sort of console?
So our initial target is E5. I believe that E3 will have some ability to access some of the functionality. I believe they're still working through exactly how that's going to look. There's a lot of interplay between what happens in Intune and what will happen in this console, especially from a configuration standpoint. In terms of what sort of actual license you'll need, we are definitely still working through that and are definitely willing to listen to feedback and to try and understand exactly what sort of environments are out there that, you know, customers are really interested in looking at. So we have like an announcement blog, and I can give you the URL for that if you like.
If you can send that along to us, maybe, and we'll put in the show notes for people
excellent.
Go and have a look at and refer to.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that, I suppose, from the audience, I think, and from my point of view, I would put my hand up and vote for some sort of functionality and features to be included in the Microsoft 365 business SKU. I think that's the targeted SKU for SMB, and it's got a huge amount of really great features. And again, I suppose one of the features that a lot of people like to see is just a bit more on the integration of the security for the clients, especially managing things like Defender, or at least getting reports or alerts, the ability for a typical reseller to look at a single console pane of glass and make sure that, again, all the machines are up to date, all the machines have done their scan securely in some way, shape or form. Obviously, the more involved, yep, that's fine. Going to the higher end licenses, that's great. But some sort of functionality to pull it into the Microsoft 365 business SKU, I think, would certainly be something that a lot of people would love to
see. Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely something that we're working with the Microsoft 365 business team. Are you aware of the Microsoft 365 Partner Launchpad?
Yes.
Oh, okay, excellent. So you already know about how that, you know, gives quite a few sort of suggestions and help in terms of creating packages that do include a lot of the security functionality that we've been talking about here to be able to get up and started with that. But also has a lot of resources for being able to get started configuring their stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Intune's gone a long way to be able to provide that ability to manage those on the multiple devices. But I think the one thing that is missing that a lot of people that I speak to do request is that, again, that single pane of glass that they could look at all the clients and make sure that they are compliant, so they all have their Defender, for example, up to date, and that they could, you know, initiate a scan, or if there is a an issue detected, it would then, you know, appear in the console and potentially send them an email or basically say, look, you know, make sure you go and address this, or this sort of incident was found on the this client. So again, this is typically what we've seen in other third-party AV providers in the SMB space. So again, just some sort of single pane of glass with an alerting functionality, I think, would be a great add. And I don't think at this stage I have seen anything that will do that. I believe you could build something in Azure, but again, a provider console would be a fantastic add-on, I believe.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be the ability to access, as I said, some of the functionality in this new console coming. Unfortunately, I can't give you much more information about it.
Exactly I understand that, and I think
I totally agree with you. Like, you know, we need some good dedicated reports and alerting and that sort of stuff, and definitely that's what we want to try and get to you all.
Yeah, so I think, like I said, I think that, you know, a lot of people are very happy that they've now got the ability to control a lot of these devices now with Intune. I just think, you know, like I said, the next natural step would be, okay, let's start pulling some of this security stuff from the clients that are Azure AD joined into a single reporting console. Now, whether you've got to build that yourself, but as long as the ability to do that isn't too difficult, or if it's provided, that's certainly going to, again, make the product, the Microsoft 365 business product, that much more appealing. And it will also help, I think, resellers get away from having lots and lots of different security products that they've got to manage, maintain, pay for, monitor, do all that sort of stuff. So I think that's where the big benefit is, and looking at the Defender and the scores that it's getting in the AV ratings and how well it's performing, I think, again, that's a testament to the amount of attention that it's getting in this space, that people are really considering it as an offering. And the only thing, like I said, is when you do have resellers to manage multiple clients to just have a single pane of glass, they can just, you know, check quickly to make sure all the lights are green and then move on to the next one. I think that'd be, yeah. Like I said, just something. And it's good to hear that, again, they're you're considering, and it's something that may come down the track. So we certainly look forward to that. Now, if you were looking at, obviously, Windows Defender ATP today, and we're talking about the E5. Now, my understanding is that the desktop client would need to be Windows Enterprise. Is that correct?
For some of the functions within E5, yes. Not necessarily for all of them. So a lot of the core protection technology doesn't necessarily need to be an enterprise client, and doesn't necessarily need to be as enrolled with underneath an E5 license either. So the core Windows Defender antivirus stuff, which is our traditional antivirus, that includes cloud protection as well, which accounts for a lot of what our protection engine is doing, as well as what we call attack surface reduction rules, which is similar to a sort of HIPS offering, host intrusion prevention system. Those, in terms of licensing, you can use them within E3, as we've sort of discussed. We're aware the reporting's a bit lackluster on that. That's the only sort of drawback that we have to those.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, and I mean, and that's understandable. I think that as the product obviously comes together and you work out the you know, what's provided in each SKU, then I think we'll see, like I said, you know, different, slightly different versions. That's what we see in, you know, Office 365, Microsoft 365, based on the license, and that's fine. I think that, again, the ability to have, you know, the basics, then you add on with the licenses is more than adequate for most people. But just understanding, obviously, what they get in each package, and then that's going to help them make a better decision for their clients on what is the best way to go, so that they can manage as well. So I think that the protections, the stuff that's already there, they're quite happy with that, what it can do. And like I said, it's just that reporting and management would be nice to, again, help them do their job a little bit easier, I think. Now, yeah, when we're talking about the back end console that is available, say in the, you know, the E5 SKU and the high end, you know, what sort of information are we going to be able to see from that when we do have it all configured? I mean, what can we expect to see in this console that's really going to, again, give us that benefit of going into that E5 style SKU?
Yeah, so you're going to be able to see, like, pretty much exactly the sort of reporting scenarios that you've been describing. So you know, an all-up idea of like all of the machines that you have, what sort of detections you have, what sort of issues have popped up on individual devices or perhaps security groups that give you an idea of exactly potentially where issues may be. So, you know, one example could be that by looking at these reports, you've determined that there's a specific security group that you've created or a specific user group you've created, and they've all appear to have been infected with some similar sort of malware. And then you can maybe do a little bit more investigation into terms of determining exactly what happened and why that specific user group has become more susceptible to this malware. And it may turn out that there's a specific configuration policy, perhaps an attack surface reduction rule that hasn't been applied or that has been applied but that has been incorrectly configured. And we'll be able to tell you, hey, look, we think that potentially the reason why you're seeing this is because this specific configuration hasn't been rolled out properly or hasn't been configured properly. And once you make that change and configure it into the way that we recommend, this is potentially what this new report would then look like and everything would come up green. The way we've tried to really sort of look at it is to give you a sort of a high-level overview with what we're calling cards that give you that really easy-to-look-at graphical sort of interface that says, of these, you know, 100 devices that you have, 97% are fully up-to-date and have been fully patched against all sorts of vulnerabilities or may have the latest version of antivirus definitions. And this remaining 3% don't. And you can then click on that card and interact with the report that comes up to really understand and see exactly which machines don't have that latest update, and then also roll out the update to those machines. So it's about starting off with really easy to understand information that gives you that, you know, all the lights are green or all the lights are green with some orange or some red or whatever, and then doing a little bit more further clicking to find out exactly where those errors are that are causing the oranges and reds, and then for us to potentially give you the solutions to that that you can just click away and fix that security problem that you might have.
Okay, so that surface reduction policy that you've mentioned there, is that something that's coming from Windows Defender ATP or is that coming from Intune? Actually, where is that policy applied? Is that a configuration policy or is that a monitoring policy? Where exactly is you know, would you set the baseline that's then measured against?
Yeah, so for the attack surface reduction controls, currently you can manage them or configure them within Intune. So it's a device configuration policy that you create, and then you need to choose endpoint protection as the specific profile type, I guess. And then within that, there's a whole bunch of settings and options for Windows Defender Antivirus, Attack Surface Reduction, Controlled Folder Access, various other ones as well.
Okay. All right. So again, that's an Intune thing which we could do immediately now that we have access to Intune as well. Okay.
Absolutely,
all right. I'll have to
yeah.
make sure that I go and double check that. Another question I've got for you is that more and more in this world, we don't necessarily live in a total Windows OS world. We've got Android, we've got iOS, we've got other devices that are connected to our corporate information. We're able to configure those with things like Intune, as you mentioned, to put those policies in there. Are there any thoughts on how, you know, Defender, so I know it's Windows Defender, but is there any thought or any you know, down the track planning maybe to provide something, some sort of protection like Defender on these other operating systems?
Absolutely. So we're looking at, you know, both sort of server type environments such as Linux, but then we are also looking at individual different types of devices, because we know that obviously in this day and age, as you mentioned, there's, you know, organizations have a whole bunch of different people bringing their own different devices, and it's all managed with BYOD sort of stuff and all of that. And it can, yeah, be a bit confusing. We're definitely investigating how we can bring some protection technologies to iOS devices. Yeah, as I said, potentially expanding that out to Linux and Android and whatever else needs to happen. That's something that's definitely on our radar. We're definitely working towards.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. I think that obviously makes sense. And that would, again, give that Again, that total encompassing ability to secure the whole enterprise, no matter whether they're using desktops or whether they're using mobile devices. So apart from those items, you know, what's on the radar for the future of, you know, the Windows Defender and Windows Defender ATP? Can you give us any insight into, you know, what the thinking is down the track, or what you see is going to be very important that, you know, Windows Defender is going to need to adapt to down the track?
Yeah, so I think the main thing is really what we've already discussed. So the first thing is, you know, getting a really great solid management and reporting console out to everyone. And yeah, you know, I totally understand and agree with you. We need to get that out to all of the segments, no matter the size of the business. That's probably our top priority for the short to near-term future. Beyond that, it's really looking at how we can get ahead of potentially the bad actors. So the people that are out there that are writing malware, that are trying to craft these attacks towards organizations. One of the things that we're, you know, really starting to double down on is this idea of machine learning, because, you know, we've realized that, unfortunately, the scope of the malware industry is such that it's too large to be able to throw people at it, to throw individual researchers at it. So instead of trying to do that and constantly playing a catch-up game, we're really starting to look at how we can use machine learning to both understand exactly what attacks are trying to do, create detection on the fly, as well as looking, you know, in certain other places where people are discussing brand new malware techniques and malware activities, and being able to really try get ahead of that so that we can create protection, whether that is through antivirus or through attack surface reduction rules, or, you know, device configuration or policy lockdowns, to prevent those attacks, so that that way, before we've even seen them, before they've even been, what we say, released into the wild, the device or the network will already be protected. So those are sort of like the two really big things that we're looking out for. As well as continuing to build upon that ability to be able to understand exactly what's going on in the network and provide some more actionable insights to admins of, again, of all types, so that instead of us just saying, here's what you need to do, here's how you can go and do it, and then sort of leaving everyone to go and sort of work it out themselves, to be able to sort of say, well, this is what we've seen, this is what we think it means, this is perhaps a little bit more informational and gives you a little bit more understanding exactly of what's going on out there.
Okay. So if somebody wants to learn more about Windows Defender, and especially Windows Defender ATP, what resources would you recommend they go and take a look at?
Yeah, so there's a few sort of resources that we could look at, kind of depending upon what you're wanting to do. So first of all, in terms of just sort of understanding how the products work and all of that, we have our documentation website, which is docs.microsoft.com. And of course, I can share the links to the specific articles, you know, to pop up on the website after the talk. We also have various blogs or tech communities that we have. We're trying to get a lot more involvement there directly between us on the project management and the product side with our customers, to really sort of understand exactly what they're looking for and how we can create something that answers their questions or solves their problems. The other flip side of resources and information that I wanted to share with you is what we're calling sort of demo environments. And so this gives an opportunity for people to go and actually play around with a fake virtual environment in which they can test a lot of these new features. And so we're constantly updating those websites. We have a website called the Windows Defender Test Ground, where we have a whole bunch of scenarios that guides people through how to set up and configure certain features that are related to Windows Defender ATP, and then test them so that they can see how it actually all works and what they need to do to get it working and customize and configure it. So that way they can play around with it, even if they don't have the licenses, or, you know, they're not at the point where they're ready to roll it out within their organization, they at least have somewhere they can go and play, and you can see how awesome it is and get a bit of an understanding of exactly what it does.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that those links are put in the show notes for this episode so people can refer to them. So as we're getting towards the end of our discussion, is there in your mind or what you see out there in the environment, you know, what's the major misconception about Windows Defender and Windows Defender ATP? What do people, you know, for example, think it is or think it does that it really doesn't do, or the reverse? You know, what does it do that people aren't aware of?
I think the, you know, the biggest thing, and this is sort of an historical thing, is people are perhaps thinking that, especially our antivirus piece, you know, is very signature based, and that's the old traditional sort of way of antiviruses, where they have to download a specific package, and that only comes through once or twice a day, and then they have to roll it out to everyone else. When really what we have been focusing on, and I feel like this is slowly starting to change, is what we're calling a cloud delivered protection. And that's where as long as you're connected to the internet and you've enabled cloud protection on the device, and of course you can roll out this as a configuration with Intune and all the others to, you know, whichever devices you want, that, I mean, drastically improves the protection time. And so one of the sort of examples that we have around that is that someone may come across a file that Windows Defender Antivirus thinks is a little bit unusual, a little bit dodgy, and you can send that straight up into the cloud, do some analysis on that, understand if it is in fact bad or not. And then if it is bad, can send the note straight back down to that individual client and block it instantly. But not only that, it then shares that detection information with everyone else that's connected to cloud protection. So that way, no one else will ever be infected by that particular malware that might be brand new and has never been seen before. So we're talking about being able to reduce that, what we call time to protection, from several hours down to literally seconds or minutes. And I think cloud protection is one of those things that's really big in there. There can sometimes be a misconception that, you know, like by enabling it, you're sending all sorts of scary telemetry, or we're going to be reading all these files and all of that. And that, you know, that's certainly not what's going on. It really is about creating really, really quick, really strong protection. And if there's one thing that I could have all the listeners come away with, and that is to definitely go out there, enable cloud delivered protection, test it out. It's going to increase. That's just a huge increase to your security right off the bat.
Cool. Well, we always know that there's some lucky sod out there who's going to be the first to get some sort of malware infection to take the bullet for the rest of us. So, again, you know, this is the advantage of doing this cloud connection, as you said, that intelligence.
Yeah, we've actually improved it now. So we can block it even before that patient zero, as we like to call it, gets infected. So that's one of the benefits of it now is you don't even know, that first person doesn't even need to get infected, and we'll just be able to tell from our analysis in the cloud.
Okay, so a last quick one before we do round up is that I noticed that there is now a Chrome extension for Windows Defender as well. Can you speak to that, you know, what sort of role that plays in this ecosystem?
Yeah, so that's bringing our what we call Windows Defender Smart Screen, which traditionally has only been available in Edge. It's in Edge by default. And we've brought that to Chrome. We will be potentially looking at bringing that to other browsers in the future. Essentially, what it does is it uses, similar to our cloud protection, it's able to determine if a site that you're going to is considered bad, whether it's a phishing website or a site known to host malware or known to do some other sort of bad sort of thing to try and infect or attack your computer. And it'll block it. And there's a few sort of different scenarios for that. Again, on the Windows Defender test ground, we have a link to how people can sort of test that and then explain how it works on Chrome as well. But essentially, it's about preventing people from accidentally going to sites that, you know, are bad. We also do apply some of our cloud protection sort of machine learning in a way to be able to block brand new sites that we may not have, you know, have on our list as being bad, but they are performing behaviors or activities that we think are bad, and so then we'll also block it.
Excellent. Well, I certainly encourage people to put it in their Chrome browsers. I do that as a standard default because I think it, again, adds to the signal intelligence and, again, helps work as a community together against these bad actors and bad websites that are out there. So I certainly encourage people to do that. And I'll make sure I put the link in the show notes to the downloads. You can add it to your own Chrome environment if you haven't done that as yet. Again, no cost to add that Defender extension for you. So to round up here, Ian, two things. Firstly, do you maybe want to just give us a quick summary of what we've talked about, the most important points to your mind for the audience? And then, again, if people want to maybe get in contact with you or follow what you're doing out there day to day with the Windows Defender and the Defender ATP environment, how could they do that? So if you can do that for us, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So, definitely what I'll do is I'll share a whole bunch of links to resources that I have to sort of go over some of these things. So the announcement of the new Security and Compliance Center console, which is coming into the Microsoft 365 suite. I'll also give you some links to how people can go around testing or evaluating our protection, various technologies. And then the other thing that I can give some links to is some various videos and that sort of stuff that I've done in the past with some other project managers talking about how configuration works for Windows Defender Antivirus and Windows Defender ATP. And now, if people want to get in contact with me, they can send me a tweet. So I'm at IanDW, that's Ian with two A's. They can also email us at wdcustomer@microsoft.com. That's the sort of email address that we've set up where we love to hear feedback and ideas and thoughts and pretty much anything that people have to say about Windows Defender.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll make sure that those are in the show notes. Again, if you just send me all the information that you've got so I can make sure that we do include all those resources for people, I think there'll be quite a significant demand to get that sort of information. I think that, like I said, Defender in generally is beginning to really get some momentum behind it. A lot of people looking at it individually and also in the corporate environments that we have in the SMB as well. I think it's, again, I've used it for years and I would recommend nothing else. It's done a really good job. And I think now sort of the next piece in the puzzle is to be able to pull this together in this Azure AD connected world that we're moving towards with things like Microsoft 365 Business. So it's really encouraging to hear that that's on the radar and hopefully coming down the pipeline not too far. And again, appreciate you sharing those contact details. If people do have questions, queries concerning Windows Defender, it's always great to have a resource that we can tap into if you need to. So again, on behalf of the audience, Ian, I will take this opportunity to thank you very much for your time. I know it's obviously time out of your day, but we certainly do appreciate that. And again, we look forward to getting those resources and getting them out there to listeners.
No worries. It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.